We continue our learning. We're in Avos, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Yud Beis. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Rabbi Shmuel, a contemporary of Rabbi Akiva, says the following. Have a kal l'rosht. The first thing he teaches us is we should be kal, light or swift, l'rosht, to someone who is in a rosh position. What does that mean? So the Bar Tanur says, l'fnei adam gadol zakein v'yoshev rosh b'yeshiva. Person who is the head of the yeshiva, who is elderly, who is in this position of leadership, a person should be have a kal la'avod avod aso l'shamesh l'fanav. Person should be very quick, very swift to serve him, to learn from him. So have a kal rosh, one interpretation of what that means. Others say that rosh is referring to a person who has not a rosh yeshiva, a person is in a position of leadership, a governor or someone like that. A person should obviously be willing to serve that person as well. It will be beneficial for you, beneficial for the Jewish people. So what person should be kal to do so, to serve such a person in a rosh position. Some say that la rosh actually stands for la'asos l'lamid, la'asos ritzon avicha shabbat shamayim. So a person should be kal, should be very swift, la rosh, la'asos ritzon avicha shabbat shamayim, to do the will of Hashem in heaven. So this is very similar to what Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema is going to teach us later on in the fifth perek, where we say person should be kal kanesher, person should be very swift as an eagle to do the will of Hashem in heaven. According to the Rambam, heavy kal rosh means a person should be kal, should be insignificant. A person who, in terms of his own dignity in comparison to someone who's in a rosh position, a position, let's say, of rosh yeshiva, heavy kal rosh, a person should feel somewhat insignificant and humble himself in front of the person who is in position of rosh. Then the Mishnah says, v'noach le'tishchores. This is related to the previous statement. Tishchores is, Bar Tanur says, le'adam bachur shasa'arosov shacharos. Tishchores like the word black, shachor. Referring to young people, people who still have black hair. To such a person, you don't have to appear insignificant. Such a person, you don't have to be so swift to serve them. You should stand in front of them in a reserved manner, calm, collected, confident, which means we don't have to rush necessarily to do to respond to every request of a person who's very young, who's younger than we are. And that's based on the Gemara Bava Metzion Daf Pei Zayin. The Gemara says, Mesarvin l'katan, v'en mesarvin l'gadol. A person can refuse someone who's less or someone who's younger, but not someone who's great, not someone who's older. So that's connected to the previous statement. Although it says we have to be kal l'rosh, nonetheless, don't you have to be kal tishchores, to people who are younger. Noach l'tishchores, be calm, you don't have to rush to do what they wish. In fact, they don't have other people are going to take priority over the katan, or the person who's younger. Some say that yes, tishchores refers to youth, but not because of the word shachor, because their hair is black, but rather like the word shachar, person who's in the early part of their life. So that's the same idea, but it's from the shorash of tishchores. It's not about shachar, it's not about shachor, but rather about shachar. And others say that when we speak about shachar tishchores, it means shachar, but it doesn't mean someone who's young. Noach le tishchores means a person should be noach, should be willing. Doesn't mean it's not the opposite of kal. Doesn't mean that, you know, we have kal, we have to rush, and noach, you don't have to rush. No, noach means a person should be very willing. Noach, it should be pleasant for him, l'tishchores, to get up early in the morning in order to do what Hashem wants us to do. Then the Mishnah concludes the last statement of Rabbi Yishmael, Vevi mekabel es kolam of simcha. You should accept everybody with simcha. Now, number one, according to the Rambam, this is related to what we said before, which is that although it's true that noach l'tishchores, even though we have the right, let's say, to refuse someone who's younger versus someone who's older, we don't have to be so quick to respond to every request of theirs. Nonetheless, we have to still be willing to accept them to simcha. Rabbi Shmuel seems to be saying something more than Shammai. Remember Shammai we learned earlier, where he says a person has to be mekabel everyone b'sever panim yafos. So here the Mishnah is telling us, sounds like more than sefer panim, more than just this positive countenance, it has to actually be besimcha. So that's another level. And others say, no, they're two separate things. Shammai was speaking about when you host someone, you have to make sure to host them with sefer panim yafos. This refers to social gatherings. A person sees someone, he should accept them with a level of simcha. Bartanu then says there's another possibility of what the Mishnah here means. Pirish Acher, from the beginning of the Mishnah, have a kalurosh. What does that mean, have a kalurosh? That means bereshischa. In your earlier years, when you're younger, have a kal asosusron barecha. You should be kal, very swift to do the ratzon of Hashem. That's the first statement. Then uvizdiknusecha kshehushkuru ponecha. So this is not youth when we speak about tishchores. Noach letishchores is when you get older, when your face has blackened b'nei hazikna because of old age. Dehei noach lo, you should be noach to Hashem. What does it mean? Younger years, we should be kal. To the rosh, to Hashem, to do ratzon, to the do the ratzon of Hashem. But when we get to tishchores, we should be noach. So they may be related, meaning one is one leads to the other. If a person is kal, a person in his kal rosh, in his earlier years, he's kal rosh, he's very quick to do the ratzon of Hashem, bashamayim. So then noach litishchores. So then when we get to the age of tishchores, where our face is blackened somewhat, when we're older, noach, it'll be easier for us to serve Hashem because in our younger years we had already started. But if a person is going to wait and not be kal in the rosh in his early years, it's going to be that much more difficult to serve Hashem in his older years. Parag Gimel, Mishnah Yud Gimel. Rabbi Akiva Omer, of Schok v'Kalus Rosh, Margilin Le'erva. Laughter and Kalus Rosh, levity, are things that lead or custom a person to be involved in erva, in immorality. We have to be very careful. This may be in front of women, in our social circles, social gatherings, just maybe in general. Person who is always involved in laughter and joking around, so this could lead to erva in general. So that's his Rabbi Akiva's first statement. Then he has a whole list of things that are a siyag, that are considered offense for something else. Masores siyag la Torah. So the first thing he says is tradition. Masora is a siyag, is a barrier, is a fence for Torah. So what does that mean? Masora is a siyag la Torah. We have a Torah and we have a Masora. What do you mean the Masora is a siyag la Torah? The Masora is part of the Torah. So Bartanur tells you, he says like this, HaMasora shemasu lanu chachamim v'chaseros v'yiseros v'torah. Heim gedra v'chizuk l'torah shebichsav. What he means is like this, the oral tradition that we have with respect to sometimes where we have letters, extra letters, missing letters, are there to strengthen the Torah, and that's what it means, are there to make sure that we keep the Torah. It gives an example, Shal Yedei Manu Mevinim Kama Mitzvos, Eich Yasu Osom, how many mitzvos there are, and how they're supposed to be performed. Come on, he gives the following example. Basukos, basukos, basukos. So he quotes the psukim from Parshas Emor, where we speak about sukkos. There happens to be the word basukos. One of them is written with a vav, F between the cuff and the tuff, and one of them is written, and the other two are written without a vav. There's not a vav at all. It looks almost like it says basukas. So what do we derive from there? So in fact, the Gemara and Sanhedrin and other places tell us that that's the source of the number of walls in a sukkah. Two are chaser, two without a vav, one with the vav, and from there we learn that a sukkah can be, well, if that, how we figure it out is, we have two with a vav, that's double, that is four. And then that is two. And then we have, because that's plural, and then I have two basukas without a vav, so that's only one each, that's four. Take away one of them, it's needed for its context. That teach me that a sukkah can have, that a sukkah needs three walls. So I only know how many walls a sukkah is supposed to have based on the extra letter vav in one and missing vav in the other two. Or he gives another example. It says, Mo'adi Hashem Asher Tikru Osam B'Mo'adam. So Osam, the word Osam without a vav can be read as Atem. So what does that teach us? It teaches us that Atem Afilu Shogigim, Atem Afilu Mizidim, Atem Afilu Mutim, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Chafei, that you are the ones, Tikru Osam, Tikru Atem, you are the ones who call, who declare when it's Rosh Chodesh and when the Mo'adim are going to be. And that would be true even if a mistake was made. So, and that's, so these are halachos that we know that it's going to be Rosh Chodesh is this day, and therefore Pesach or Sukkot is going to end up being on the following day, 15 days later, from whenever you declare Rosh Chodesh. So these are things that I know. So the Mesorah, the way the word is written, that's what Mesorah, we have the phrase Yesh Eim LeMesoras, where the primacy given to the way the word is written is important, because that's the way we derive many of the halachos. I wouldn't have this fence, this barrier to teach me to know what the Torah expects of me without having this Mesorah. Another explanation refers to Masorah actually means Gzeiros Darabanan. Then we understand very well. If the Masorah, the tradition that we refer to in the Mishnah, are Gzeiros Darabanan, decrees that are rabbinic, so we understand very well those are offense in order to ensure that we don't violate mitzvahs from the Torah. They're as a safeguard. Some say Masorah refers to the Torah Sheba'al Peh in general. The Torah Sheba'al Peh, because it wasn't written down, had to be reviewed constantly. And because it was reviewed so often so we wouldn't forget it, this is originally was not written down, the Torah Sheba'al Peh. And since it was reviewed so often, so this way we would remember the halachas, what we were supposed to do, and we wouldn't violate the Torah. Unfortunately, when we speak about Torah Shebichsav, we're less inclined to review because we could always look it up. And because of that, we may not look it up and think we know what the halacha is and not review it regularly and make mistakes. And that's why the Masorah, the Torah Sheba'al Peh in general, is indeed a siyag for Torah. Then the Mishnah says another siyag, masos siyag la'osher. Masos, giving 1/10 of our produce, of our earnings, is considered a siyag, is like a fence for osher, for wealth. Based on the pasuk in Parshas Re'eh, aser ta aser, and we have a drasha, maseches tanis, daf tesem and aleph, aser b'shusha tis asher, give maaser so that you become wealthy. So this is, in fact, we think that we're losing out on money when we give maaser. On the contrary, the Torah guarantees that if we give maaser, we'll become wealthy based on that. So if I want osher with an ayin, I want wealth, so the masters are there as serve as a fence to ensure that and protect that wealth. Nedarim siyag la'prishus, taking a neder, taking a vow, that's considered a offense for precious, for being separate, for abstinence. Why is that so? Well, many Nadarim people take upon themselves, take Nazirus as an example, a Nazir, so that person abstains from wine, as cutting one's hair. So that is, that kind of practice gives a person, is training for a person for in other areas of halacha, where a person is going to separate from some of the luxuries of this world, from materialism of this world, and that way he has a siyag, it's a fence, so that he can ensure that other forms of precious he will fulfill properly. Rabbeinu Yonah claims that this is not something that should be done on a regular basis. It's a last resort. We assume that a Nazir, as an example, is a chote, a person, he is a sinner. But the fact that he has to go through this process of abstinence in order to control his Yetzirah. He gives it the following example. You have a person who's given a very strong medication for an illness that he has, but if the symptoms are no longer there, so he doesn't have to use such a strong medication. And if he does so, that's unhealthy. That could harm him. Same thing is true when it comes to nedarim. Person takes a neder, a nezirus, or anything else for that matter of abstinence. So that may be used. The yetzirah is very strong and it's very severe. So he needs the strong medication. But afterwards, he's controlled the yetzirah somewhat. So then you don't need such strong measures. And in fact, that could lead a person in a direction that's not necessarily positive for their spiritual and certainly physical well-being. One other example of this type of nedarim or abstinence is of someone who eats chul and altaras hakodesh. Many people, the halachos, where a person has to be tahor in order to eat karbanos. There are many people who are strict even to eat non-kashim, non-karbanos food, as if they were and try to purify themselves in mikvah and other ways in order to ensure that they were tahor to eat food that was chulim, that was not holy at all. Not necessary. But to go through this, it's certainly a neder that may be worthwhile, but we have to be careful how many darim we take upon ourselves because that could be harmful in the end. And finally, siyag la chachma shesika, the fence in order to protect, to safeguard our chachma, our wisdom, is being silent. And Baruch Tanur says, ba'ma anu kaimin. So he says, hold on one second. How do we fulfill this exactly? Yeah, we should be silent. If it means to be silent from Divrei Torah, it says in Yoshua Perek Aleph, we have to be meditate in Torah, which means we were assuming we're teaching and speaking Torah day and night. So I shouldn't be silent with that. If it means that it's telling us that we should be silent from Ruchilus and Lashon Hara and cursing people, Doraisininu. Those are mitzvahs. Those are assumed Doraisa. I don't need a Mishnah Pekir Avos to tell me to be silent from Lashon Hara, etc. Ha'enu medaber ele b'shesika medivei harishus shebein onem l'chavero. He's saying, you know, it's speaking about just voluntary conversations between people. We should also be silent. She'esh lo adam ma'et ha'dibur bahem koma she'efshem. We should try to minimize even those conversations. And he quotes the pasuk in Mishlei, Yud Zayin Gam Evil Macharish Chacham Yechashev. A fool, if he's going to be a fool who's silent, he may be considered a chacham. So why is silence so important? So silence maybe gives us an opportunity to hear others, to listen to others. It's an important chesed. It allows us to learn from others. It allows, if you don't blurt out an answer right away when we're listening to a shir, so maybe you have time to digest it a little bit and analyze it a little bit and internalize it a little bit, and then we can maybe formulate a question, formulate an answer a little bit better after we're silent. So all of these are reasons how shesika, silence, is a siag, is a fence, lachachma, for wisdom.